Another day, another dollar as a holler to the world. I love the way I'm living, love the Gucci, love the girls. Love the parties and the clubs, love the models and hot tubs. Love the German engineers set on deep dish dubs. Another tour around the world, entertaining the fans. I love walking through the airport, taking pictures, shaking hands. Every day for me's an oyster, crack it open, find a pearl. I love the way I'm living, what a holler to the world.
Welcome back to Marking Out with MVP and Dwayne Swayze. What's up, P?
I am Montel Vontavious Porter. This guy over here, this is Dwayne Swayze.
All facts.
Mr. No Gimmicks.
Yeah, real name, no gimmicks.
Yeah, I fucked that up. Real name, no gimmicks. I will tell you, honestly, I will tell the truth right now. Right before we started this, I hit a bowl of some awesome Pacific Northwest green, man, and I'm feeling magnificent right now.
I did notice you a little extra laid back.
Yeah. I was having a stressful morning, so I was able to counteract that stress with some de-stressor.
10-4.
Totally harmless concept.
Yeah, a little THC.
Yeah. So, yes, real name, no gimmicks. Dwayne Swayze.
P, are we gonna crack open the Yamazaki 17?
When the Yamazaki 17, actually, it's on back order. It's on back order. But the 12, as you can see, is uncracked. We shoot here all the time, but I haven't been able recently to come here and enjoy my locker here at this establishment whose name we won't reveal because you're not invited. But, well, some of you are. Some of you are invited. If I see you somewhere in Houston, I might tell you, hey, meet me over at, because it's a speakeasy, get it? And I'll pour you a drink from my locker. And, yeah, Yamazaki 12, not 17. Sorry.
Yeah, my bad.
Look it up. And, yeah. We'll crack this open and talk a little wrestling. Here, I'm gonna take my shades off for the occasion.
You cool with starting with Patreon today?
Absolutely. We love our friends at Patreon. Even of Hope.
Well, the question's from Hope.
Ah! Man. Hold on, let me get my grill.
Oh, he's super H-Town right now. My down.
Oh man, that song was hot when I signed my development deal. Man, dude, I remember being at Mansion Nightclub.
Oh, right.
Where I used to work with a bottle. Sit right next to one of my homeboys who was super cool. We used to ride tight. He had a table and all his people. And I remember I was fresh and I was back then, hoes didn't want me. Now hot, they all on me. Oh man, you couldn't tell me nothing. I had just signed my $500 a week developmental deal. Back then, I was didn't want me. Now hot, that was all on me.
So good old Hope P.
I'm just messing with you, Hope. Go ahead.
Our good friend. So Hope says, oh guys, so before I even start with Hope's question, if you want to submit questions to MVP, please join our Patreon. The link to our Patreon is pinned in the description below. So Hope says, it sounds like your interest in wrestling grew and became a reality during and shortly after your incarceration. Do you believe that you would have entered pro wrestling if you hadn't been incarcerated? And if not, what do you think you'd be doing now?
Time. That's exactly what I'd be doing. Time. Because I would be dead or in prison for trying to get rich. And that is a painfully honest truth. I like nice things, so I'm lucky to be talented in areas other than robbery or drug dealing. Brief version, I've told this before, but I grew up a fan of wrestling in South Florida. I used to watch Gordon Solie, Florida Championship Wrestling. And my mom used to take me to the Miami Beach Convention Center when I was in first grade. So I always grew up as a fan. I never had t-shirts and action figures. I wasn't, you know, that kind of a fan, but I always enjoyed wrestling. And when I got locked up and was sent away to prison, I didn't watch wrestling for many years. Just a few things I remember: Ron Simmons capturing the title and reading about it and seeing a clip on the news. And I remember Ron Simmons. I always liked Ron Simmons. You know, I was like, oh shit, Ron Simmons is the champ. Damn, that's damn okay. You know, like, damn, good for wrestling, man. You know. And then when I was at DeSoto Work Camp, we were able to watch the WWF limited show that would come on like Sunday afternoon, and we could see like half of it, and it would be count time.
Okay.
So I got a chance to see the highlight of Lex Luger slamming Yokozuna, the Lex Express. I remember being weirdly captivated by Adam Bomb. I remember thinking the Undertaker was one of the coolest things I had seen. You know, this dude that walked super slow and looked like Solomon Grundy. You know. And then, boom, no wrestling until I got to Opa-locka Work Release Center. And one night, I was listening to talk radio, as I did often, and there was a talk radio show. I don't remember, Wrestle Talk America or something. And everybody kept calling in talking about ECW. When will it be on TV in my area? Everyone's, you know, it was the buzz. And they had Taz as their special guest. Mm. I didn't know who Taz was. I didn't know what a Taz was. But by the time I was done with that interview, I was a fan of Taz. It was a dude from New York, slick talking, slick rapping, like a classic heel, but cool in how he did it. You know, I'm like, I don't know who Taz is, but I want to see this dude.
Yeah.
And then ECW finally was being shown in our area on, I think at that point, it was TNN. And I used to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, so that I could get out of the work release center and go to AA, eat some cookies, drink some coffee. I used to deviate, which is against the rules. If you're a work release and you deviate, they will send you back to prison. I used to deviate across the street to get some Chinese food and deviate my ass back to AA. If you get caught, you know, that was dumb. I shouldn't have done that. But that Chinese food sure was good, sitting in the back of AA. And I've never been an alcoholic. I have abused alcohol. I enjoy drinking alcohol, speaking of which.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Thanks, Hope.
How good is that, man?
Yeah.
How good is that?
Yeah.
Is that tasty?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those notes of caramel and hints of spice. But I went to AA. I respected everything there, you know, but I wasn't an alcoholic. I went because... Oh, in Florida at that time, if you went to AA, you also got 2 days off your game time, your time off of behavior. Going to AA or some drug program was worth 2 days. I was killing three birds with one stone. Going to get some Chinese food, getting out to work release center on a Saturday night, and getting 2 days of game time. And the key was when we came back from AA, the Opa-locka Work Release Center would be in count, where everybody has to be in their room while they're being counted. So anybody being introduced new into the facility gets put in a holding area. So now they can conduct the count. Well, the holding area for us was the day room, the TV room. And I've said this, I've told the story in Florida. At the time, there was a rule that if a program was in progress, you couldn't vote to change the channel. So when these cats came out, we was watching wrestling. Some of these cats was like, no. Watch that bullshit. That's what we're watching tonight. Because it's on and you can't change it. And I had already like started to take an interest in wrestling around this time because Primetime Daryl D, who was a correctional officer who worked at Opa-locka Work Release Center, he would bring in videotapes of some of the pay-per-views or some of his indie wrestling matches. Yes, Primetime Daryl D, Officer Davis, was a professional wrestler. And he bring the tapes in, and we watch them in the morning before we get released from the work release center. And I asked him one day, like, hey, man, how do you guys do that without really breaking each other's necks? And he said, I see you out there playing basketball. You know, you got some size to you. You're athletic. If you want to, when you get out, I'll teach you. And I was like, for real? He gave me a book to read about how to be a wrestler written by King Kong Bundy. Quick read, just a little paperback, but very useful information. And I gave it back to him in like 2 days. And then sometime later on Damian Abraham's show, The Wrestlers, he accused me of not returning it, but I returned it to him at the work release center like 2 days later, because I read a lot and I read fast. And I lapped it up. I was like, yo, this is interesting to me. And when I got out of prison, Primetime called me about 2 months later and asked me if I still wanted to train. And I said, yeah. He said, yeah, you did a long bid. I'll call you again in a little while. Enjoy your time out. And if you still want to do it, we'll start. He called me like 2 months later.
Damn.
He said, you still want to do it? I said, yeah. Then the following week, I went to his sister's house where he had the yard set up. And I got my very first professional wrestling
ring in the backyard?
Ring in the backyard at Primetime's sister's house.
I know.
And that was my introduction to wrestling. And then when he ended up having to take that ring down, Duke the Dumpster Drozy had a wrestling school that was being run by Soul Man Alex G, and a gentleman who I'd had previous encounters with in my juvenile delinquent career. Different story. But Prime took me to Duke the Dumpster School and presented me to Alex and asked Alex to train me. And I never paid a dime for wrestling school.
That's amazing.
I never had to pay Duke. I never had to pay Alex. Those gentlemen early on saw me as a prospect. They put time and effort into me. They saw me blossom. They saw me grow. And eventually they saw me become MVP. So thank you to Primetime Daryl D, Soul Man Alex G, Ram Man, O-Town Miser Moore, Norman Smiley, Dave Johnson, you know, the Market Crashers, but Bruno, Dan, all of those guys from that South Florida scene who saw something in me and put something in my possession that I was able to make a life out of. I appreciate you, gentlemen, because if it wouldn't have been for that, there's a very strong chance I would have fallen back into a life of crime and been in prison or dead. Yeah, hold on a second. What a great shot this is right here. Like with the Yamazaki right here, the biscuit. The bright ring that a young MVP bought for herself to congratulate itself on all his success. He bought a watch that, well, another story. Reserved. We're seasonal here. We're seasonal. We have boxes decorated as gifts for that holiday that we call Christmas. And I won't go into a rant about holidays, but I'll just say,
all right.
Yeah, I'll just say that I appreciate Dwayne Swayze for the touch. That's it's a very nice touch.
Oh, thank you, brother.
It's classy. You're a classy gentleman. That's why we get along.
Well, yes, yes, yeah. We're the classy guys.
Whiskey, Christmas presents, reserved, custom suits. Yeah, this is marking out with MVP and Dwayne Swayze. And at this point, if you're watching this, you should like, comment, and subscribe. I'll say that again. You should like, comment, and subscribe, and share this content with a friend that you think would also like it. And if you don't like this, why would you still be watching at this point? So somebody's lying.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
So how do ring size, rope tension, and arena layout change the way you plan a match?
Dylan Swayze, you ask an excellent question.
Thank you, PVM.
Well, if you work for a reputable company, especially a sizable reputable company, you have a dedicated ring crew. People, their job is to maintain that ring. And I don't know what the failure rate would be, but it's got to be close to like 99%, you know, that the ropes don't pop. Now, I've had ropes break on me before on indie shows. I've never had a rope break on me in a WWE ring, an Impact ring. MLW, Bob Rosen used to handle their rings, and he does AEW rings now. Okay. So I give a Bob Rosen ring is about as good as you can get. AEW, but ropes, cables sometimes break. The tightness of the ropes can be adjusted, but again, it depends on where you're at. So if you're on, you know, a lower tier indie show, there's a good chance that you could be in what we refer to as a shitty ring. And a shitty ring is a dangerous ring. But then you have guys who are, you know, a lower tier, but they take pride in their safety and the quality of their rings. So when you're putting together a match, most wrestlers, and you know what? I'll be honest with you, man. Like, once you get to the level of AEW, WWE, Impact, something like that, New Japan, you can go out there knowing your ring is safe. You don't really have to check the ring. On indie shows, something I learned early on, and a lot of young indie wrestlers will tell you that they've learned this from somebody either through a lesson taught or a lesson learned. You go to the show way before the fans are let in the door, and you walk the ring. You get in the ring,
okay,
and you walk it in circles. You walk it back and forth so you can physically feel boards that are sticking up. You can feel parts of the ring where maybe it's been eroding or it's been built improperly, and things sag a little bit more. So you'll step on this part and it might dig in a little deeper than the next part. Sometimes the canvas, the way it's tied on, is kind of loose. Imagine making a quick pivot.
Yeah.
The canvas holds your foot and your knee goes,
yeah,
your ankle goes. I've seen that happen a lot through the years. So generally speaking, if you are at a show where you've never worked in that ring before, or, you know, maybe you work for these indie people, but you don't know where that ring came from, you don't know who set it up, it's your responsibility. Let me say that again. It is your responsibility as a professional to get in the ring before the show starts, inspect the ring yourself, walk the ring so you can feel the parts of the ring that might be dangerous to you. I've been on a ring once where they had these steel clamps in between the 2x4s, and somehow, I guess when they set it up or somebody's bumping on it, one of those clamps got bent and was sticking up.
Oh no.
If you would have bumped on that, it would have been being stabbed by a short knife, because that's how much was pointing up. I found it. Luckily, they were able to correct it. Your responsibility to walk the ring. Your responsibility to run and hit the ropes a little bit, to see what they feel like. So, you know, some people use actual rope, rare, because that's a little higher tier. Lots of people use cables. A lot of people use cables and put garden hose around it. A lot of indies. It all feels different.
Yeah, I was going to say, that can hurt, right?
Well, it all hurts. When you learn to run the ropes, even on actual, like in a WWE ring, for example, with real ropes, the first time you learn to run the ropes, everybody thinks running the ropes is easy. It looks easy. Ask anyone who's ever run the ropes, and you'll see it in the comments. People are like, oh yeah, I did that one time. Your whole side is going to be bruised because you're not used to having any physical trauma in that area like that. those ropes, that's like getting hit in the kidneys.
Oh,
you know?
Man.
Yeah, so
I don't
everyone,
have to do that in my training.
Oh, yes, you will. You will absolutely learn how to run the ropes. And I'll call Monica to ask, how's he walking today?
Yeah, get that old bad lip.
Yeah, because that one side of your back, the way you hit, some people hit the ropes flat back. Some people hit the ropes a little sideways. I hit the ropes a little flat with a lean, and something I learned is when I hit the ropes, I always grab the top rope with my hand over this way, and I tuck my elbow. The secret that I learned, and this is something that I learned in elementary school when I first started pro wrestling, something Soul Man taught, and then I remember later on, and somebody hit me with it again, but my left hand always goes down by my side. When I run, I hit the ropes, I always hit the ropes, boom, like this, it's automatic. Because if this rope snaps and pops and the top rope goes, you're usually gonna go ass over tea kettle. But if you have that left hand there, you can grab that rope and stop yourself from going.
Okay.
I've seen people hit the ropes and the rope break and boom, they went tumbling. Fortunately, they didn't get seriously hurt, but not because they couldn't.
I think like I'm seeing Bobby go over the rope or something, like a rope snap.
Oh, yeah. I think it was at a live event.
Okay.
Yeah, at a live event, the rope snapped and he went over the top. It happens. And knowing how to go with the fall, but sometimes you can't, you know. In Bobby's case, he went over, he let his momentum carry him, he didn't panic, he didn't reach out, and he was able to find his feet. He didn't get hurt too bad. He got a little banged up, but he didn't get hurt. And again, all the rings are different. When you're a young indie worker and you're traveling to these different cities, you're in different rings. And I said, some are built by competent people, some are built by incompetent people, some are built by people who mean well but have no clue. Some use rope, some use cable, some are tight, some are loose. So when you're putting together your match and you've had a chance to inspect the ring, then you get to talk to the person that you've been booked to work with that night, and hopefully that person has walked the ring as well and they're familiar with the ring. And then if you're a guy that's like a high flyer and you need tighter ropes, and there's a chance that those ropes might not be as tight as they are now by the fifth match. Some promotions, they don't necessarily have a guy go out there and tighten up the ropes in between matches or at intermission or whatever. So you would definitely adjust your style, because some of the moves in your repertoire you can't do on loose ropes. If it's a really uneven kind of, you're not going to do a lot of running spots because it's too easy to twist something or trip.
And what about like with the larger ring and then like your stride?
So you have 20-foot rings, 18-foot rings, and 16-foot rings.
Oh, okay.
16-foot rings are tiny. That's what they use sometimes when they do shows like in a bar or something.
Okay, okay.
So you have to learn to adjust your stride, because when you're taught to run the ropes, they teach you to run the ropes with the rhythm of "We Will Rock You." So when you run the ropes, you go doom, doom, sh, doom, doom, sh, one, two, spin, one, two, spin, one, two, spin. That's a 20-foot ring.
Yeah.
If you're in an 18-foot ring, but you just lost 2 feet. So you have to adjust your stride. And if you're in a 16-foot ring, you're walking across the ring. You know, 16 sounds huge, but it's really not. It's a really tiny ring. And again, you have to adjust your style, because if you do a 5-star frog splash and a 16-foot ring, you're just going up and down. You know, you don't have to go out, up and out, you know. So there are all these factors when you're talking about the type of ring, the quality, that come into how you're going to work your match. Hey, I'm not going to take a lot of bumps this match because this ring's kind of dangerous. If you're a professional, if you really know what you're doing, you're able to still take your moveset that fits, that works, is safe, take his or her moveset that fits, that works, is safe, and turn it into a quality match where the fans are still entertained by it, but nobody's going to get hurt. And remember, the name of the game, kids, get paid, don't get hurt. And as far as building layout, that usually doesn't matter as much unless you have certain gimmick matches that require you to be outside the ring, or, you know, usually the layout of a building won't affect how you put your match together, because Your match is supposed to be inside the ring between the ropes. You're not supposed to go over the top outside to the floor. Yes, we do it. I'm not knocking it, but show layout would affect your ability to do a dive because the building's too small. You can't do a dive. There's fans right there.
Right.
But that's usually not the case. So,
how would you adjust your entrance for like an indie show versus AEW?
Usually you just shorten it.
Nope.
Because you don't have the big stage and walkway. You just come like right to one point where everybody can see you and, you know, boom. And then I go down to the ring. Maybe once I get in the ring, I'll go up to the corners and, you know, acknowledge the people and whatnot. But if I got a big walkway, oh, we soak all of that up. We use every second of that because you're watching me. But you got a short one. You do everything right there. You go to the ring.
When a star teams with a new name on TV, what can the star do on camera to help the newcomer shine?
Oh, man. That's actually that's a cool question. Because you didn't ask about wrestling against a star. You asked teaming up with. So that's cool. A lot of the time, in the business of professional wrestling, a younger star who they want to elevate or they want the fans to invest in, they'll pair up with an older star and make a tag team. Or usually they'll do it where, you know, somebody gets crossed up with somebody and they end up, you know, being put together as, you know, they have to strike an accord and go up against the bad guys. So that younger talent automatically gets elevated just by being accepted by this established talent. Now, if they're given separate entrances, you're standing on your own. But once you come to the ring, if that established talent comes over and, you know, gives you and pulls you in for a hug, or you get a dap, and, you know, he's talking to you, and people see him interacting with you in a positive way, then right then you're elevated. You're getting the rub, as we call it. Now, once the match starts, people always want to see the hot tag go to the hero. So, but that also becomes a problem sometimes because people also want you to get heat on the one you care about. The whole point of getting heat is getting sympathy. So there comes a certain psychology to decide, does this new talent get the hot tag to save the established talent? Mm-hmm. Or do the people care enough about this new talent for him to take the heat and for the hot tag? Because anytime you tag in John Cena, everybody do a big pop. Yay, you know. But if John Cena's the one in there selling and he's trying to make the tag, and that young guy's trying to be there for him, and you make that tag, then that kid comes and cleans house, but tags Cena back in to take it home.
Right.
And then, oh my God, look what they did together. You know, like, wow. And, you know, afterwards, Cena raises up his hand and, you know, they show that, you know. Now, your investment in Cena seeps over into him or whoever that established star is because, well, if my hero likes this guy,
right,
I like this guy. Cena did something like that for me once, which I thought was completely cool. I didn't ask for it. A lot of you guys will remember this. When the Denver Nuggets went to the playoffs.
The jerseys. Okay.
But they didn't. Their owner didn't even book the arena time because he wasn't sure they were going to make it to the playoffs. So they had a playoff game. So WWE got canceled. And Mr. McMahon was not happy. So he was able to book the Staples Center, which they were all too happy to accommodate him. It was the Lakers and the Nuggets. And that night, I found out that I was going to be in a five-man tag team match. At the time, I was a babyface, where I'd be wearing a Lakers jersey. and our opposition, the Heels, would be wearing Denver jerseys. And I thought the concept was actually pretty funny. You know, I wasn't crazy about having to wear a Lakers jersey, but, you know, I was down with the fun of it. It was super cool, great concept. And while we're in the room putting the match together, everything's laid out, and Cena says, "Hey, P, how about if we, on the tag, I come in and I do the five-knuckle shuffle, you do the ball, and we drop it at the same time."
Oh.
And I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
That was Cena's idea, his suggestion. Where I was at on the card that time, I wouldn't have even suggested that to him. You don't have that much fucking ass in the game to suggest that. But here's how to get a younger guy over. Now, at this point, balling, you know, was pretty over. But to do it with Cena with the five-knuckle shuffle elevates it. And, you know, again, what a way to get me over as a babyface to the fans than doing a tandem signature move of mine with the biggest babyface in the game, if not of all time, possibly. You know, the numbers might say different historically. I don't know. But in my time, anyway. And it was dope, man. It was cool because, like, everybody was with it, you know. And I remember sometime later seeing the clip of it, and I was like, that was cool, man. That was cool. So, yeah, the baby face, especially if it's a baby face teamed up with another younger baby face, you give him the tag and give him an opportunity to do his signature shit, especially if he's got something that's, like, getting over and you're the big baby face, but you know people like when he does this, you know, 450 spin or whatever, you know, and you hype it up and you tag him in and you let him hit it, boom, it's like, yeah, you know. There's a moment where everybody's like, yeah, my favorite guy makes me like this guy, you know? And that's kind of how it goes.
Did you pin Randy Orton that night? I don't know. Or was he on your team?
No, he was on the heel team.
He was on the heel team.
He was on the heel team. I don't know who won that match. And that's the beauty I tell people all the time, like, people don't remember who won, you know, like, they just remember you had a match and whether it was good or not. A lot of the time, people don't remember who won. And that's crazy about my career. There's so much due to pay-per-views. I forgot I was in. And people go, oh, remember when you were like, what happened? Oh, you pinned so-and-so or so-and-so pinned you. And I'm like, oh, yeah. So I don't remember. I remember it was fun. I remember everybody was into it. I don't remember who pinned who.
Could we jog your memory from the payout based on that night?
Oh, that was just a regular Monday Night Raw.
No, your pay-per-view ones.
What do you mean?
On the pay-per-view, like, how much you got paid for that night? Would you remember the matches based
on
that?
Oh, I understand your question now. If it was a significant, you know, pay-per-view, because it got to the point where there was almost like a pay-per-view every month, it seemed like. Yeah. You know, you had these like brand new, what I remember they had the shit like where voters could vote what kind of a match it would be. And dude, literally, we had a match one time where it was me against whoever the voters picked. And it was a shoot. They didn't work it. They didn't say, okay, we're just going to have you and Kane. We're going to let the voters pick what the match is going to be. We'll tell them they picked. It's going to be you and Kane so you guys can put together a match. It was a shoot. It was legit. So Steamboat was my producer, and I was either going to have to face Khali, Kane, or who was the third option? Maybe Mark Henry, maybe. Like three, like, big, unhuman people. And what I do remember is, like, the other two guys that were in that choice, I could definitely go out there and work a match with. You can't go out there and just call some on the fly with Khali. Like, you can't do that. And I mean that sincerely. Like, that guy, the way he worked, he needed prep. Mm-hmm. You had to go over things with him multiple times and tell him, I'll be here. You make sure you're here, you know. You can't just do that. But they would just do that. And I don't, it was Cyber Sunday or some shit like that, you know? So there were pay-per-views like that where the check came and I was like, that's a good week check, you know, like, hey, $3,500 for a pay-per-view. And it's like, and granted, I was never up there where I saw, like, you know, Batista or Rey Mysterio pay-per-view money. And when I would work with him on pay-per-views and I would go to compare, like, how much did you get for that pay-per-view? I got like a third of what Dave got, or you know, a quarter of what Ray got or whatever. But thrilled to have the opportunity, because now fans are seeing me in there with those people and going like, oh, this guy must be good if he's in there with Rey Mysterio. So yeah, a lot of those pay-per-views I wouldn't remember, but yeah, there are certain ones that just by the payday. Yeah, I do remember. I do remember that WrestleMania. I do remember that SummerSlam. I remember the $50,000 check I got for that SummerSlam. Man,
that's awesome.
Lost in Translation is one of my favorite films. If you don't know the film, if you're not familiar with it, then if you are somewhat of a pseudo-intellectual and you appreciate films that don't have explosions, guns, and violence, then give Lost in Translation a try. I have always been a Japanophile, and I saw Lost in Translation before I went to Japan and thought, what an interesting place. And then I went to Japan. I spent a lot of time in Japan, and Lost in Translation has a whole different understanding now. That scene where he's talking to the director, Bill Murray is talking to the director in Japanese, or rather the Japanese director is shouting a bunch of direction to Bill Murray. And then the interpreter is interpreting with two sentence interpretations. And Bill Murray goes, he said all that. And I remember experiencing that where somebody's like talking for like 2 minutes. And then the person goes, MVP son, he say, maybe a big match, what will you do? I'm like, man, I was just talking for 3 minutes.
No way.
But Scarlett Johansson, Bill Murray, late nights in Roppongi, Lost in Translation. And he's doing a Suntory whiskey commercial, Bill Murray being he. And the line is, for relaxing times, make it Suntory time. And it's a really cool scene. And I've been to that hotel, and I made it a point to go to that bar and drink Hibiki 30. Oof. At that time, $100 a pour. With Low Key, no less.
Oh, right.
Me and the legendary Low Key were there enjoying Hibiki 30, day after a Wrestle Kingdom. We decided to stay in Japan and hang out for a week, you know. But yeah. For relaxing times, make it Suntory time. Lost in Translation here in a foreign nation. For relaxing times, make it Suntory times. Relieve your frustration. 109 of Shibuya. All the B-style girls get low. Sakura, Kyoki, Ryoko, Dema of Tokyo. See ya, Space Cowboy.
I just lay back in something new. Whiskey 21 and over low ball. Make it too neat. Dizzle from Harlem. Yeah, I'm from Houston off of Fondren. Mike Mazan and real world flow. Plant these seeds in the streets and in weeks. Watch it blossom. Dark night. Riding on chrome. Swinging through Gotham. It's me and Pete. Repaving these roads.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.